Good morning and welcome to Rochester Speaks. I'm Carl Schmidt, and joining me today is Christine W., a member of Overeaters Anonymous, and Edward R., who is co-chair of those meetings. How are you guys doing today?
Great. Good morning.
Christine, do you mind telling us a little bit about Overeaters Anonymous and what's that all about?
What OA is a 12-step program similar to Alcoholics Anonymous. All the 12-step programs are spinoffs from AA. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship for anybody with a compulsive eating problem. Usually the three main manifestations would be overeating, bulimia, and anorexia. So anybody with those three issues would benefit from OA. It's a 12-step program. It's a free fellowship. You don't have to pay anything to come. You don't have to say your real name. You can come to as many meetings as you want. We have live Zoom phone call meetings. Nobody weighs you or makes any of that public to the other members of the group. So that gives people a lot of confidence to come in. You can come to a meeting and not say a word, just listen. So that makes it stand apart a little bit from other maybe weight loss programs that people might have tried and failed with in the past. So
we don't have
that to end.
Yeah, we don't have any. We don't have a diet plan. We don't weigh people. It's really the focus is on helping people to refrain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors. That's really the goal through the fellowship that Christine was mentioning. When someone comes into the room of an OA meeting and they have an eating problem of one kind or another, people around them in the meetings understand exactly where they're coming from. And that's very beneficial.
Do you mind telling us a little bit about the 12-step process you were talking about?
Well, our first step, we're powerless over food and our lives are manageable. What that means is all the willpower in the world, all the friends, all the threats, all the compassion, support, whatever of other people has not changed our eating problem. We come to a point where we are powerless and we can't stop whatever it is we're doing, whether we're overeating or throwing up or starving, or even overexercising is another manifestation of this disease. So, and then that the eating disorder kind of wrecks the rest of your life too. It makes it hard to be a parent. It makes it hard to be a worker. It makes it hard to be a friend. It makes it hard to be anything because we're so obsessed with what we're doing 24 hours a day that we're just not available for anything, you know? And a lot of us get fired from our jobs because of our eating disorder. We get divorced or we lose our kids or our kids hate us because they're being neglected in some way. So that's just a brief nutshell of what the unmanageable thing means. A lot of people, when they come into the room, they're really a mess. You know, their whole life is a mess. They're not just overweight or underweight. They're in a real jam with everything. Do you want to add to that, Ed?
Yeah, they may have sabotaged their relationships, like Christine was saying. Their loved ones may have lost patience with them. They may have had problems on their job. Any number of other manifestations. But the 12 steps for us are a way of dealing with the compulsion that we have no control over. The 12 steps become a way out of what is the kind of the dark hole that we've all found ourselves in. The 12 steps become a way of life for us to help us, not only for the eating, but also just in terms of managing our lives as we go forward.
I should go on and say, you know, I talked about step one, but what the other steps do is give us faith in some kind of higher power. A lot of people, it's just the group in the beginning. Maybe it turns into God. Maybe it turns into whatever. That doesn't matter. We're not a religion. But going along with that, we just try to take stock of what's going on in our lives. And, you know, look at what we call our character defects. Maybe we're really angry, or maybe we're really lazy, or maybe we are really selfish or bossy or something. And the steps help us, you know, become aware of what we need to change. And then this higher power helps us to change. And then we have step 10, which we're supposed to keep track every day of how it's going, not just do this inventory once and never do it again. And then the last thing we learn is service, which means, which the reason Ed and I are doing this today, we're passing it on. We're trying to help others. And this is just kind of a public relations thing we're doing just to spread the word, because it's possible that a lot of people have never heard of Overeaters Anonymous. And, you know, if we could get it on the radio, you can't go if you can't find it, if you don't know it exists. So thank you so much for this wonderful opportunity to spread the word.
Oh, of course. And you had the 12 traditions. It seems that kind of goes hand in hand.
The 12 traditions.
Yeah, go ahead, Ed.
Go ahead, Christine.
No, you go. I just talked. You go.
The 12 traditions are, in summary, are the way our organization, the way we work as a group. It's our rules to live by. Teaches us how to treat each other. The steps kind of help us as individuals work our way out of the hole that we've dug for ourselves. The traditions talk about how the fellowship works, and how all of us in the fellowship should treat each other.
Yeah, and the great thing about the traditions is, if I learn to use them in our fellowship, I can learn those practices and principles anywhere I go, at work, in my house, with my friends. I've found the traditions to be just as helpful, if not more so, than the steps. Because one of the things that kind of fueled my eating disorder was I couldn't get along with people. You know, if I can learn to get along with people with the steps and the traditions, I might not do my eating disorder anymore. So it's been a beautiful program for me.
The steps for me also helped me to develop a spiritual side of me that had been neglected before. Our program, we believe that a higher power of your own choosing, it doesn't have to be God, it can be anything of your own choosing, that our higher power can provide a daily reprieve from the illness of compulsive overeating. And for me, that kind of enabled my spirituality to grow. Because I do believe, for me, my higher power is God, and my spiritual work grew from the program. But the traditions also are helpful. Like, the first tradition is our common welfare should come first. You know, our work should, we are nothing as becomes more important than our working together and each other. And that, in addition to a good rule for life, it's also very important for the program. Because our program isn't about any one particular person, any one particular star. The program emphasizes principles before personalities. And that's why we're all anonymous, because it's not how well Christine does or how well Ed does, but it's the program and how the program can help you. And that's the most important thing.
And one of the things that's a very common thread among all addictions is most addicts are very isolated people. Mm-hmm. And partly because we don't know how to get along with anybody. A lot of us, like me, have come from very abusive childhoods and have a lot of damage. But the program kind of really stretches that for us, because we know we have to come to meetings and we have to interact to get well, and we don't want to. We want to just keep isolating, but we're not gonna recover that way. So that was kind of frightening for me to have to get what we call a sponsor. You don't have to, but it's kind of really recommended. They're sort of like a counselor. Of course, you mm-hmm. don't pay them, but there's someone that you can call every day if you want when you're having trouble. They help you through your steps, because you can't do the steps by yourself. I had one sponsor. She died this summer, and I met her 30 years ago, and I was more upset at her funeral than I was at my own mother's funeral, because she was so helpful to me, and we were so close, and she was in the delivery room when my first child was born. That's how close we were, you know. And I just loved this person. And, you know, I mean, she didn't know me from Adam. I walked into the room and I asked her to help me, and she said, sure. And if I needed to call her at 2 o'clock in the morning, she didn't get mad. She'd answer that phone and talk to me, you know. And you don't find that kind of fellowship in too many places. you don't find that anywhere, really, you know, except maybe a suicide hotline or something. You know? But, you know, we understand what kind of pain people are in when they come in. You don't even have to explain that to us. We know, you know, we already know, we've lived it, we've been there. And people like us don't want to be told how to fix ourselves by someone who's never had an eating disorder, because what do they know? You know, and we automatically kind of turn off because they don't know, they don't get it, you know. And we had a new person in our meeting the other day, and you know, we were reading our book and relating to what was read in the book and talking about it, and he was like, wow, I do that, and you know, he really felt at home, because how many people even talk about addictions? It's a hush-hush topic usually, you know. It's, I grew up in an alcoholic home, and the rule was you don't ever talk about what goes on in this house anywhere to anybody, you know. To come to a place where you can talk about anything is such a gift. It really is.
And the thing about overeating, you know, is that, you know, unlike alcoholism or any other kind of addiction, is you have to eat three times a day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you don't have to drink three times a day, but you have to eat three times a day.
Mm.
So it's in some respects, it's even harder to kick compulsive overeating than it is either alcohol or other kind of substance abuse. You know, that's why sponsors come in really handy. Mm. You know, it's also a way sponsors pay back. That's their service. That's step 12 that Christine was talking about. It's paying back the service of what we've been given, you know, how our lives have been changed.
And usually when I sponsor somebody, it tends to help me more than them, because I'm reinforcing everything I need to do by saying it out loud to someone else. And they may not even do it. A lot of people just leave the program and go back to their old misery because they don't want to change, or they're scared, or I don't know why. But as my sponsor said, they haven't had enough pain. And yeah, that's probably it, because you got to be hurting pretty bad to want to get better. You know, that's the way addicts are. We don't make any sense. Everything's reverse psychology, you know. And if you say to an addict, you're not going to make it, then they'll turn around and make it because you told them they couldn't do it. You know? So it's just kind of weird, you know, how we function.
That's very true.
And the people in the program know that. They know that. Mm-hmm. The psychiatrists and the counselors and the pastors and the ministers, they don't know that. And so they feel sorry for us and pat us on the head, and we don't get better. But our sponsor gives us a kick in the rear end, and all of a sudden we're doing better. You know, it's funny.
Do you think it's harder to catch something like this or notice it in someone that you love or know personally, considering this is, you know, more revolved around food and those kind of disorders, as you stated?
Yeah, it's very hard when you see your own child heading into overeating, or your spouse or somebody. It's really, really hard. And they, if they want to get well, they have to get someone other than me for a sponsor. I can't sponsor them because I'm too personally involved.
Sure.
You had any experience with that, Ed?
I was going to say, when I look back, when I look back on my own family, and I see, you know, that my father used to love to eat three or four or five times a day. And at the time, I just thought he was a happy guy that ate a lot. And my mother used to keep these gigantic bars of chocolate around the house all the time. And well, I didn't think anything of it as a kid. I just thought she liked chocolate. But she was an overeater, and she was overweight. And my father, when he retired, he developed an enormous problem with his weight. So, you know, I come from a long family of overeaters and alcoholics. So the addiction runs in the family. So thank God right now I'm the only one in my immediate family that has this problem. you know, but it runs in families. And most of us have other addictions in our families.
And do you mind telling the listener how Overeaters Anonymous kind of started up there?
It started with a woman out in California in I think it was 1958. She had been out of control with her eating for many years, her whole life, actually. She was in her 30s, I think. And a friend of hers was going to Gamblers Anonymous. And she happened to go to a meeting with them. I don't know why. She was just curious about their program. And she was listening to how they use the steps to stop gambling. And she said, wow, I wonder if these steps would work on eating, you know? And he says, oh, probably, you know? And she says, maybe I'll start a program about eating. And he says, oh, okay, you know? And it was funny because we have her story printed in one of our books. And she talks about how she mangled the steps and she took God out of there and she rewrote everything from a psychological viewpoint, and nobody got well. And she finally realized she had to put it back the way it had always been for years and years and years, because it wasn't going to work Roseanne's way. It was going to work the way it always worked. And that's how the whole thing got started. And that was in 1960 that they actually had their first real meeting. So yesterday was our birthday for OA. What is it? 40? How many years?
It's from 60. So it's 63 years.
Yeah. January 19th. 1960 is the birthday of OA.
That's right.
So we like to celebrate. We do things in our meetings to celebrate sometimes. We might read the story of the founder or have a speaker or just do something special to commemorate it.
So, Edward, can you tell me how Overeaters Anonymous receives any of its funding?
We talked about the traditions before, and our seventh tradition is that every OA group is self-supporting. So we are self-supporting all over the country. Members contribute. There's no dues or fees. People give what they can.
Well, thank you very much, Edward and Christine. Again, this is Rochester Speaks with Overeaters Anonymous, the Rochester chapter. And if you're looking for information, you can check out rochesteroa.org. And if you're missing internet in your life, you can call the number at 505-891-2664. That's 505-891-2664.